have on our schedule, and some of you have read this, it says village form, and then it says the intersection of ideas of what's going on in sessions and what's going on in hikes and all over the place. So the teaching staff got together this morning to figure out what the intersection of our ideas might be. And we had all kinds of amazing thoughts about brilliant things that we heard in sessions and maybe even said in sessions and stuff like that. So we talked about all of that, and then somebody said, you know, back in the 70s? Is that right? 70s? You were here in the 70s?
Vermont.
Okay, Vermont. Vermont was here in the 70s, right.
Yeah.
That there had been hilarity forms, and that was part of Holden Hilarity, and that was the focus of the form. So instead of just looking for the intersection of ideas, we decided we'd focus on the intersection of our experiences, especially experiences at Holden, and about looking for the hilarity in them. And sometimes that's hilarious stuff, and sometimes that's satire, and sometimes that's story, and sometimes it's stuff that makes us cry. I don't know. And we're all kind of different, and some of us say we don't have a jokey bone in our body. And telling jokes isn't exactly our style, and some of us are not leading tonight because that's not our style. But that's what we talked about as a teaching staff. That's what we said, huh. We'd love to engage the staff in this as well. And everybody said, you know, a really funny staff person is this guy sitting over here, Aaron McCandless, who's saying to me, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing.
You don't.
Exactly.
But I'm here, and it's Holden, so we'll figure it out.
So I asked Aaron to start us off by telling us a funny story about Holden, and then to keep us going by involving us in telling some of our own stories or jokes or satire or whatever about Holden. And we'll probably go for no more than an hour, maybe less. Maybe 15 minutes if there's nothing funny to say. But I'm going to let you take the lead.
Got one.
Okay.
Well, hi, my name's Aaron. I work here in operations and got to grow up here coming to Holden as a kid from age 7 on up to 26 next week. I've gotten to experience lots of different things, especially the hilarity side. And I come from a family that has, I think everybody is an extrovert in my family. So, I'm going to start with a story that happened last week. this is my aunt works down at the Chelan Paper, she's the editor, and she sent me a link to this article that was written about our first wilderness backcountry rescue that happened last week. Usually these are quite different, so I'm just going to go ahead and read, and this is from the point of view of the folks that run the llama ranch down in Chelan. So I'll just begin. The llamas come up to do pack trips for the Forest Service. They pack in tools and trail crews equipment for extended periods of time, and they'll come back in and pack all their stuff back out. So each animal can usually take about 60 pounds on their pack, and that's what the Forest Service uses it for. So the llama trek, June 25th to 26th, 2011. As we were leaving the trek for the trek, I commented to our llamas, Jeff Berman and these are the Llama Sherpas, as they kind of refer to them as. Jeff Berman and Josette Peltier from 25 Mile Creek, that we never get bored because something new always seems to happen. That proved to be an understatement. We left our ranch with 6 llamas aboard the boat, boxes full of saddles, hay, pallets, and our own gear and food. The waves weren't bad and we made good time to Lucerne, our destination up lake. The llamas got off at Lucerne Ranger Station area, and we walked them to the Lucerne dock. Meanwhile, Jim drove the llama boat to the dock, unloaded all the gear, and moored the boat at Refrigerator Harbor. There's some pictures up here. I'll pass them around afterwards. Is that right? The llama truck, quote, from Holden, arrived early, and we quickly loaded the gear and llamas for the 11-mile trip up to Holden. At the luggage dock at Holden, where we unloaded the llamas, there was a crowd gathered to see the process. As each llama came off the truck, we found a youngster about age 10 to 15 years old and handed them their lead with the llama, asking, would you like to hold the llama for us? The parents were as excited as the children and began learning to walk the llamas around, trading llamas among themselves. After 15 minutes, we announced we were going to go walk to the ballpark. Would anyone like to lead a llama to the park for us? Each llama had a different youngster, and they all went the whole way there with their parents. The youngest was a small 5-year-old who chatted along the way and seemed probably the most excited. We hitched the llamas along a long rope and began the saddling process. Soon the crews arrived with all the buckets and boxes of food, supplies, tents, tables, tarps, and lots of tools, Pulaskis, pruners, shovels, rock bars, etc. That's always when the Tedium begins. Although the crew had the buckets and boxes weighed, there's always a little juggling and pairing items to go into their saddlebags on each side of the llama. Each should weigh within a pound of each other so that the load doesn't begin to sag on one side. Some llamas can carry more than others, between 50 and 70 pounds, and some do better with bulky items than others. Finally, we were ready to go, as the llamas had to ford a creek partway up the trail, and because they can't cross a single tree log bridge for humans, the crew members waited for their llama after the fording. As they hiked along the 4-mile trail to Heart Lake, the mountains on each side with their rugged beauty and snow-capped mountains always are a delight. The path first is soft soil, then changing to more difficult rocks and side creeks, needing careful footing. One healthy llama named Legs suddenly sat down and did not want to get up. With much coaxing, he still didn't get up. He was carrying most of the tools. They were taken off, and some of the crew ahead came back later and took the tools to the final destination. Meanwhile, Legs stood up, walked maybe 20 feet. His hind legs wobbled, and he sat down. No coaxing would work. The other 5 llamas returned to camp. In the evening, Jeff and Josette decided to check on Legs, who had been tied to a tree. He was standing up. They led him a short distance, and then he sat down, period. Down. The next morning, I hiked back to Legs. He seemed rested and ready to go. Great. And we were off in the direction back to camp for about 25 feet. Then down. Rest. Coaxing. 20 more feet. Rest. Coaxing. 10 feet. Rest. Nope. Nothing worked. Jeff and Josette arrived with the other 5 llamas loaded down for another trip to Heart Lake, and Jim stayed to help me with Legs. We made it to the, they call it the fork, the Heart Holden Lake Trail Junction. Then down he went again. No rest nor coaxing would work now. Up, up, pulls on the halter, tugs, pushes. Then the smart llama learned that if he were to lie down, turn on his side, with at least 2 feet in the air, he was about impossible to coax to get up. So there we sat. We were about half mile away from the road where the truck could come, in wilderness territory that doesn't allow motorized vehicles anyways. Jim left for Holden Village to see what could be done. About half an hour later, he arrived with 4 strong, good-looking young men. It says that, I'm not lying. Good-looking young men with a clean, heavy, white tarp and a huge coil of soft rope. They all had smiles on their faces, ready for this new adventure. One was a firefighter. Experience hauling heavy humans in various fashions as he especially began thinking. Rested now for half an hour, Legs walked again for about 20 feet, then down again. He rolled over, legs in the air, and we decided to roll him onto the tarp. The 4 corners lifted and the young men were struggling. Legs probably weighs between 350 and 400 pounds. Divided by 4 humans, hauling. Whew! Then we went about 20 feet, then they set the llama down. Up stood the llama and walked about 10 feet, then down. Meanwhile, a gal ranger arrived. She's never going to let this down. She's here right now, too. The ranger gal. She took one side of the middle. Jim took the other side of the middle. Things went better. 6 people, a little bit longer distance until set down. Legs walks 20 feet, then down. Thus slowly, ever slowly, lift, down, walk, etc., we arrived to a waiting pickup truck that they managed to get him into the back. Exhausted, dirty, the guys were still smiling. What a bunch of guys. The nagging question was, what was wrong with Legs? He was healthy, young, and running all day before. What happened? Legs was driven down to the lake in his own pickup truck to the boat landing. The other 5 llamas with our gear and us in the bigger stock trailer. Jim got the llama boat and we first loaded our gear, then the 5 healthy llamas. Now, Legs, one of those handsome young guys who came all the way down to the surge, opened the door of the bed of the truck and lowered it. Legs jumped out as he was led quickly onto the boat, which was near. Then he sat down. Ah, in the boat, just inside the bow door. Perfect. Hurrah. Everyone was cheering and very exhausted. Below in the photo, there's some pictures you'll have to take a look. You can see Legs, brown body, lying just inside the bow door, and all the other llamas are still standing. It's a great picture of Thomas and the little Legs.
Is he the next one?
I'll pass them around. On the way back, we pondered several ideas of what it could be. We unloaded all six llamas, and then Legs sat down right by the shore, but he was home. We took Jeff, Josette, across the lake to 25 Mile Creek and offered them an ice cream reward from the store there. It was a lovely night and several people were around. We sat down and I noticed Fallon, the daughter of one of our friends who works there. Fallon has only one more year left of vet school at Washington State University and is doing several internships around the area. We told her the symptoms and that we expected it could be a llama tick paralysis. We just didn't know anything else. She said that could be the problem with the spinal cord that's caused by a meningeal worm, which is carried mainly by the tall white-tailed deer. We have lots of mule deer here and not too many white-tails, so we didn't think that was the problem. Fallon then suggested looking for a tick exactly below the jaw in the hollow portion there. They would most likely be able to get it as they were grazing. Sometimes the llama has to be shorn to find a special bath prepared to kill the tick, and they shave the llamas off, all their hair off. So, all four of the llama handlers were very tired from the trek. Josette commented that she had a full week of massages coming up due to, etc. We parted ways. But so grateful to Jeff and Josette for all their help, a solo trip to Heart Lake, and it was only their second day of being llama handlers. Back at the ranch, we unpacked what we had to and took the other five llamas back to the barn. Legs tried to follow, but his hind legs just slid on the hill and he had to sit down. We gave hay, water, and llama treats, put them right next to Legs, showered him, and went to bed. After breakfast, we found Legs had traveled several feet from the dock area to our log cabin. We giggled, llama tick paralysis, and found several articles about it. I got a small chair, a kneeler, and we started feeling all over Legs. Jim found a small tick, but it wasn't engorged with blood. At 10:30 a.m., I found a very large tick, fully engorged, and just a few inches below the jaw, exactly where Fallon had suggested it might be. Wow, maybe we won't have to shave Legs all over after all. That's the end of the article, but Legs came back up 2 days later and is doing just fine. So the whole llama tick paralysis. What an experience we had here, and stories that are still coming in from all over. This article went to the Forest Service. It's been in newsletters, and who gets to carry a 400-pound llama out of the backcountry every day? That just doesn't happen. Only here is what we tell people. So, I have tons of jokes. I got to meet Wes Free when I was a little kid, too. So, who has some good Holden stories? Funny Holden stories. Is that what we're going for, Jen?
Any Holden stories.
That's this summer. This is kind of a long story.
It doesn't have to be a llama one. It doesn't have to be a 400-pound one. Just anything.
Okay, I'm brave. I'm leaving tomorrow. When 1973 to 76, we lived here, and Ted was the carpenter. But I was reminded of this story tonight when the fire alarm went off. We lived up in Chalet 12. It was July, and he'll tell you the details because I wasn't down fighting the fire, but the alarm went off. We ran out onto the porch, we looked down this way, and there were flames, and I thought we were going to have a heart attack. He's like, there's a fire!
A real fire!
So he ran down, and later that night and the next day, he told me, it's a wonder we didn't all die. The firefighting was bad. So he'll tell you all the crazy things that happened.
Well, we came running down, and there were a lot of guests in the village, and this one gentleman came every summer, and he always came in a suit, tie, white shirt, you know, like he was going to church on Sunday. He was that way all week. Well, he runs down with us, and we went down between the village center, between the snack bar and Narnia, because the fire was across the creek. And at that time, there was, starting around, right about behind Narnia, on back, there was standing water, about 4 feet deep. And so we had to get the hose across this water. So all, and it's dark, it's pitch dark, other than the glow of the fire. So a bunch of us are out there, and also this guy, fully dressed in his nice suit. We get out in there, and pretty soon we see he's leaning over, you know, feeling around on the butt. Well, he's lost his shoes. The muckers pulled these nice dress shoes out of his shoes. So anyway, we get the hose out there, and they're feeding hose from back here somewhere, and the all out there feeding hose. And the fire chief was one of the farthest people out, and it was dark, and there was people all over in this, standing in this muck. And he said, the third time the joint went by me, I thought, wait a minute, we don't have this many hoses. The hose had gotten in a big circle out in this swamp. And I'm standing out there feeding them in a circle. To get that straightened out. So we're getting close to the creek. Meanwhile, two other couple of Mavericks went across the footbridge, up on the tailings at a dead run. It's dark. They ran right off the edge of the tailings. Head over down, and landed down by the creek. They didn't get hurt, thank goodness. So meanwhile, Sid Burns, I believe, is still running the concession down at the Donkey Lake. Mm-hmm. At that time, Sid Burns was a young man. He was the Holden ranger. And he would stay in the summer up at the little ranger place up here. Meanwhile, when this is all going on, Sid very calmly, he gets his chainsaw, goes across the bridge, walks down the creek, and it's one tree that's burning. Somebody had a bonfire or something, caught in the tree. He cuts the tree down, dumps it in the creek, puts the fire out. Meanwhile, the whole village is running around killing themselves. And I'm sure there's more stories from there, yeah. But that's the only ones that I...
Well, the next morning, somebody came to coffee, and they had a black and blue leg like you wouldn't believe it. And there wasn't a porch off of the snack bar. And in between the two, people would sit out there, and there was this humongous log. And they came, I thought it was Sherm Finer, but somebody came tearing around that way and tripped over the log and just about broke his leg. So after that, we all prayed that there would never be a real fire at all in the village because we'd all burn.
I hope that they are audio recording.
Never know. I'm not sure, actually. I hope so too, but I'm not sure.
Who else?
Firefighters wearing suit and tie. Good idea.
I'll remember that next time. Tonight, somebody went into the sauna looking for the light switch and pulled the fire alarm.
Oh.
That's the second time in 30 days.
Are they going to now put a big sign that says, not this one?
Well, the first time it was a kid, but tonight it was an adult, so.
You can't see the sign unless you have the light on.
That's right. So, well, fire alarms are always good. Always exciting.
Well, it's kind of funny because in orientation you're told to stay where you are. Oh yeah, we know you'll know if it's where you are, otherwise stay put. And I was upstairs here when it went off, and I looked out the window, people were just running all over the place, running out of their lodges. I'm like, aren't we supposed to stay put? Yeah.
And then there's that guy.
About the second time we were here, the fire alarm went off. You can help me with this story. Because we were here, we were sleeping up here.
Yeah.
And the other couple that were with us were in the room next to us. And we were just settled down, the fire alarm went off. And my friend, who's in the other room, she starts putting on her contact lenses. I mean, she was so shaken. She puts her contact lenses on before she goes down. We're supposed to meet down at the ball field.
Yeah.
And so we did that, and then everything was clear, so we went back to bed. And it went off again, and we all had to go to the ball field. And then we got settled down in the third, and it happened the third time in one night. We all got it.
There was about four.
Or four times.
Or you just stay in bed.
Then the next morning, somebody was in the bookstore, this young man who was mentally handicapped said he was wanting to buy a whistle so that the next time the fire alarm went off, he could wake himself up with the whistle.
Oh, yes. Indeed. In the operations land here at Holden, we have our days here. Everybody has days. You know, one of those days. Usually ours happen on Monday. Just the case of the Mondays thing. Mm-hmm. Usually it's how it goes. Last year in the spring, early, it was like May, we had our meeting, and at the very end of our meeting we were told that the time has come to pump the septic tank. You could hear a pin drop in the room. Excuse me? Pumping and septic in the same sentence? I don't think so. I didn't sign up for that. So every 3 years we pump our septic system, and it's very... You'll hear, as well, you're here, that it's a very unique infrastructure and it's very sensitive, which it is. But we have two septic tanks and then we have a drain field, and it works very well, but the septic tanks have to be pumped every 3 years. So in years past, since we've had this system, we've had contractors come in and do that, and it gets kind of spendy, but it's something that has to get done. So this year we did it by ourselves. And I don't know whose idea it was to do this at night. So it was a Monday, of course, and our utilities crew had prepped the tanks, and we were pumping one. We pumped the liquids earlier, and that was fine, and we were pumping the solids, and we were a little more prepared, so we thought. We had a new pump come in on the generator pump come in on the barge that day. Of course, it's that day. So that's why we're now doing this at night. So they're ready to go, and we have a portable generator, some scaffolding, and some lights set up in the Narnia parking lot, and we have two trucks. One of our trucks had two 1,000-gallon tanks, and the other one had an 800-gallon tank on the truck, and then an 800-gallon tank on a trailer, which were manufactured here in our shop out of old diesel tanks. It's welding on old diesel tanks. Not the smartest idea. So we pumped a bunch of CO2 in one end and prayed, as Terry says. I'm not going to be in this garage while you're doing that. So he went fishing for a few days. So we start pumping, and the trailer and the truck are full. And it was his sign. It starts pouring down rain. And I was like, we should not be doing this in the rain. You know, one thing. We drive down the road, and we're going 8 miles down right before the switchbacks. We dump it in a huge gravel pit we have down there. And we had this planned out where you're going to back down and then just open the valves and drive out. No problem, right? It's raining. We get down to the top of the switchbacks, and the gas light comes on in the truck. Okay, no big deal. We have a truck with poop. We're good. We stop. We have a small road tank that has about 300 gallons of fuel in it. So we stop. And I'm pumping on the gas hose. It's raining, but whatever. There's two of us down there. Pumping the gas hose. And I'm soaking wet anyways because it's raining, but my legs start to burn a little bit. Gas hose is leaking. Of course. It's okay. Minor detail. I can change my pants when we get back. We dump our poop, and we come back up to town. It's like 9:30, 10 o'clock, it's dark, and they're still pumping the other truck, so good, I've got some time. I was driving this truck all night. So I changed clothes, came back down, then we started having problems with the pump after we sucked up a bird out of the septic tank in our hose. Whole bird, yes. I think that was about the same time that one of our utilities folks took a wrong step and went leg deep into the poop. You can't make this up. This night was just continuing to get worse. So about an hour later, there was four utilities people, another one of them was taking the cap off the top where they pump into the tank, and you just heard the pressure release kind of loud, and then, whoa, I look over there, and he's just walking to Chalet 1. What's going on? He yells, I'm okay, but I think I just got some in my mouth. John comes back 10 minutes later and says, whoever's vodka was in the freezer, I'll pay you back. But I'm good. So to chop up the poop from more of a solid to a finer liquid, we had a Holden-designed masticate machine that we built on the long drill rod and put it on Terry Sanderson. He's our mechanic. We put it on his big electric drill. It's a whole hog drill. It's meant for drilling big holes in metal. So it works great. It's got a lot of power. So we were using that all night to chop up the poop. Everybody, we take a turn. And we're pumping. It's starting to go. I mean, we're getting our rhythm, you can imagine. So one truck at a time down back on the road. Well, the boom truck had been down for a while, and we were a little concerned. So, okay, well, whatever. We'll just leave. So we leave town, and I was driving. It's dark. There's only one other truck on the road. We'll be fine. Driving this in the bus in the daytime is one thing. At night, in a rainstorm, with a poop trailer and poop on another trailer, I'm just like, okay, this is asking for trouble. Well, they blew a fuse coming back from the poop camp, and one of the headlights was out, and the other one was really, really dim. So they have headlamps out the windows. We passed each other safely, but it was a little dicey there for a minute. So later in the evening, it's getting into the morning hours, we've moved about 8,000 gallons of poop successfully. It's great. It's a lot of poop. Thought I'd never have to see that again. It's 5 something in the morning, pouring down rain still, and somebody was trying to make fun of the guy who fell in the tank earlier in the evening, and, well, he misstepped as well, and in he went. That's about when the other guy dropped the drill, Terry's drill.
Oh, no.
We heard this big thud. The generator blew a fuse. Sparks flew. All the lights went out. Things stopped. The generator pump went off. Everything went off at the same time. Steve says, well, I think I dropped Terry's drill. Pull out the drill. And everybody had called it a night. Pretty much everybody on that project was living in Chalet 3, so the next morning, if you were to look at the porch, everybody in Chalet 3 was asleep, but their clothes, boxers, socks, shoes, shirts, rain shirts, everything was laid out on the balcony front railing. And Terry's drill magically was in the repair shop, and every different part you could possibly imagine on a washcloth that had been washed off. And to this day, I still think he doesn't know that it fell in the second day. It still works. That's what happens after you flush. It goes somewhere, and someone has to see it again. I think I might be out of the village next time.
How much money did you save?
We saved like $16,000. It was big.
Was it worth it?
You know, it was an experience. The gas hose problem. I told the Forest Service I thought bears were chewing on it, and they laughed at me, laughed in my face. So we get an email from the biologist a week later, and there's this bear chewing on our gas hose. This baby bear teething on the gasoline hose.
Oh,
oh
man. So what are you going to do next when 3 years comes again?
I'm not going to be here.
Yeah, right.
Not for that project. I'll be down the road.
Push it with Terry.
Terry.
Efficient with Terry.
Efficient with me and Terry. He was not there that night. What a smart guy.
That's true.
Did you bring in all the porta potties then? Because that's what we were here one
oh,
time
no.
when they did that.
We just told them not to flush. It worked for a night.
But yeah, we were here one time and the porta potties out here for me. The flush for.
Oh, that's not good. So some of the things that arise here are a little exciting. Who else? Who's got a story, a funny Holden story? Things happen here that don't happen in the real world, as people that live here call it. We used to tell the May Youth Weekend kids, that high school kids, that there was Starbucks at Heart Lake, and we could get about 90% of them to believe us. Nobody has any Holden stories? And you've all been here before, I know all of you.
They don't have to be non-fiction.
Any exciting bus rides up the hill?
Oh, last winter.
Last winter.
Pastor Scott was driving.
I wish he was here so I could.
He is here.
It would be great if he was here, you know. Good thing he's not.
Oh, he is here.
You're sliding pretty good there.
Switchback three.
Yeah.
Switchback three.
I was the one that came up and talked to you.
Yeah.
We had a little powwow.
Yeah.
So what happened?
We're sliding.
Well, there's about a foot of slush and water and snow on the switchbacks, and it was just the I think I was maybe too close on the inside, and so it was just really, really just slush and muck, and so I couldn't make the turn and needed to back up a little bit, but when I tried to back up, my wheels, essentially it wouldn't turn, it would just slide kind of straight backwards instead of actually, that front wheels actually like
they were sliding.
Getting some purchase and actually turning. They were just sliding straight backwards. And so, to the point where, it was clear if we kept going the same direction, we would, you know, make a quick
descent
down toward the lake. But the grader was just below us on the switchbacks and was able to pull us to kind of pull us back and straighten us out on the ground, up and around. Meanwhile, everyone had to stand out on the switchback in the kind of sleeting snow.
That's funny. So you're trying to get the grader to go by the bus,
right,
the bus and shoving it over the edge to do it.
Good.
Those are interesting radio calls.
Safety.
I'm backing up now. Whatever.
Yeah.
Registration copies.
All right.
Stop. Stop.
And even the trip down to a week later. For those of us who this was the first experience, there were two trees that were lying in the snow like the day before. Two big trees laying there. It's like, no problem. Your bus driver becomes your lumberjack. He jumps out with the chainsaw and gets a few fellas and, you know, cuts it up and, okay, move on to the next tree. Okay,
yeah.
Let's repeat the same fire drill.
Roland, do you have any stories to share?
once I was, it was during a May Youth Weekend, and I was doing the words of institution over the elements, and I was going to, you know, in the night in which our Lord Jesus Christ was betrayed, he took bread, and somebody cut a loud, audible fart. Of course, the kids all started laughing. And so I'm standing there with my hands out, you know, like this for the dramatic words of institution. So when they finished, all I said was, you know, this is what happens when you eat low on the food. So we all laughed and got it out, but got the laugh out and continued. But we had to have a community meeting about the fart. Tuesday, and we talked about that fart for about 45 minutes. The guy who did it said it was an accident. And another guy who was also a prolific farter, he said that he could tell that there was force behind it. Whether there's truly force behind it. Some people were mad at me because I didn't continue on as if nothing had happened. So we talked about that for about 45 minutes.
Was there a resolution to the fart discussion?
You probably shouldn't do it again. If you cannot, you know, just try not to do it again.
So it was more of a verbal warning than a written warning.
It was a verbal warning.
Okay.
It was the longest conversation I'd ever had.
And then did you start eating higher on the food chain?
No, that didn't change.
I have another shorter one. Before the village got the bombardiers, in the winter they'd go to the lake with the Swedish snow tracks. The little red ones, there used to be one laying next to the museum up here. I don't know if it's there yet. And they had a Volkswagen engine in them, and of course Volkswagen engines have a tendency to leak exhaust, and this is the air coming through the engine area is what would heat the passenger cabin. And so they always drove them with the back doors open so that anything that came through would just go out the back. Well, that was fine, but then we had one driver who was very, very sensitive to carbon monoxide, and he had a gas mask that he would wear when he was driving.
For real gas mask. It looked like
so you can imagine being a guest coming in the winter, and you get into the snow track down at the lake, and the driver's he was a very nice guy, very polite, soft-spoken guy. He gets in the driver's seat, puts his gas mask on. There were some guests with some really big eyes. But they all lived to get to the village.
Right.
In January, we have J-term students that come here for a month, and we usually try to think of a couple of jokes to play on them. And this year, we decided that every time we did our table prayers, that all of the staff would get on our knees and pray. And it was a great joke, except none of us could look out to see how it was happening, because we were just like, oh my gosh, I'm going to laugh. So the time I did it on the microphone, I couldn't even look at anybody. But we were all cracking up, and it was a great joke, but none of us could check and see what the students were thinking.
I saw a few, like, on a couple of occasions, especially like the first time or two we did it, these students would, they were like from Luther College. I saw one who was in the buffet line and got down on her knees in the buffet line holding her food.
The year we were here and the J-term students came up, we decided one Thursday for hunger awareness, whoever was, I don't know, it was the pastor, set it up in a very somber way. We did, the prayers, we did the small service that came before, and he said, this meal is really kind of a meditative time for us, and so we really ask that we share this meal in silence and that we not speak and that we think about what's been said during this time. And you can see all of the students kind of nodding. And then they brought out the trays and we served snow. But with all the standard condiments that that usually be like rice today, right? And so, people really got into like brewer's yeast and the soy sauce and Tabasco, and
And we had the same issue where we knew if we looked at each other or started to talk, everyone would just lose it. And so we had like this entire meal for 20 minutes. We just, everyone silently ate bowls and bowls of snow.
I've been here for a few J terms and we've played some pretty ridiculous pranks, and then we've also done some ones that have lasted the entire month, and you tell them the day they're leaving so they can't get you back type thing. We put cereal bowls on the toilets and a sign in them that said collecting belly button lint for summer weaving. That was one that lasted the whole month. We put an exercise bike in the dish pit and hooked a conduit box to the front wheel, ran wires underneath the dishwasher, and we had a sign up list where our village schedule is posted for dish team and whatnot, and for power pedaling, power being the key word there. We told them that we didn't have enough electricity to run the dishwasher. So we needed, you know, this is how we kind of stay in shape, and we all had the schedule, and it was signed up solid for the first week by Holden staff. And then the kids were like wanting to ride the bike, and I think when their professor was on the bike for like an hour, some of them stayed there for like an hour. We had little water bottle racks set up. They were so excited, and almost every student got to, it was part of living in community and living outdoors. So, welcome to community, get on the bike. It was pretty funny.
They never knew?
They didn't know.
Oh.
And no, they didn't know. It looked so good with our conduit box and everything. Ran.
They never found out.
Well, we would tell them too that you had to keep it above 30. There's a little gauge. So anything under 30 doesn't do anything. So they would be standing on the pedals.
I have to admit that even after having like played these pranks on people, when we came up for J term, because Petter led a J term trip up here, and knowing there were going to be all these pranks, I totally got fooled by one 2 years ago, which was that, and this sounds so unbelievable. Was anybody here? They made this entire bulletin board on which end of the dining hall where the minor stuff is right now. Okay, so it's like a full done bulletin board about how the village had adopted a baby. I know seems like ridiculous. But they had pictures of like the social worker and like the letters back and forth, and it was like, you know, like it was like an up and coming kind of social work organization that really believed in kids and community, and it was just a foster situation until they really set the kid up with a different foster family.
Well, it was like it takes a village to raise a child.
And they had feeding schedules set up, and like here's what you should know about child nutrition, and like here's who we'll feed the child with. And then like they did this remarkable job of like, you would have no idea who the parents of this child, like you would have had no idea for the first week or two we were up there. I mean, the child got passed around so much, they like totally stuck to the schedule. And I was like, at first I was like, haha, and then I mean like, and I know that there's all these jokes, but by the end I was very convinced. We had a lot of discussions about whether this was
true. I think the students figured it out before we did. And they actually planned to email or send a letter to like the Washington State Department of Family Services and say that the baby's not being taken care of properly, it's not being fed, and this kind of stuff as a means to. And I think they were just going to leave a copy of the letter at Holden when they left.
They do figure it out sometimes fairly quick. We gave them their housing assignments off the bus and told them that our toilet paper roll order didn't come in, so we handed two people a roll of toilet paper and said, this is it for your month here. That's all we said. And so for like the first week they were really nervous, and when they found out that we had hid every single roll of toilet paper under the stage in the village center. And so for revenge, they went to all of our living spaces and took all of our toilet paper. That's a good one. It takes a lot of work in the wintertime.
We also did a J-term trick where they came and we had a whole community meeting about when we were going to do the next nude ski trip. And people were arguing about where to go and when to do it. And the last time somebody had on a thong, and that wasn't the way it was supposed to go. By the end of the discussion, the kids from the college, whatever college it was, were chiming in saying, well, you know, if you went this way, they were getting into the discussion. You know? So we carried that on for about an hour and a half about the nude ski work. I guess that makes my time here sound a little risque, doesn't it?
Living in community right there. Good stories. Who else?
Well, I don't know that it's a particularly haha, but the first year my husband and I came here was 1972, and there weren't a lot of double beds in the village. In fact, I don't think there were very many at all. They were mainly all single beds, and this was the first time we'd come up here and. My husband had, well, that's the whole story of how we got here, but anyway, we were on teaching staff, or my husband was, and he knew the directors, and we'd never been to this part of the country. We're from the Midwest. We didn't know what in the world we were going to get into, and it was going to be for a month, and we went into our wonderful room in Chalet 3, and it had twin beds, and I said, oh, no. For a month, this is not going to be very good at all. I had never met Carol and Mary Hinderly at all, I just thought, this isn't really, I don't know about this. You know, oh, well, we'll make the best of it. But then I went up to Carol, and I just said, are there any double beds in this place? And he found one. And I don't know how many there were. I mean, clearly, maybe a lot of the teaching staff had them. I don't know. I mean, there was some discrimination in terms of who had mm-hmm. what, you know. And but we got one. And that was, I guess, you know, Holden empowered me. I felt like, and I just gotten off the bus.
did you get the double bed without Carol telling everybody about it for at least
year? Ted, I think you probably did. Not Carol, yes. I think it was a well-known fact.
Very good. It's not the case anymore.
Things have changed.
Aaron, you must have had some good medical cases over the years, don't you?
Yes. So I work on call as an EMT here at Holden, and in the wintertime I'm on a paramedic unit in Seattle. So of course I like doing that up here because everybody's very nice. I was coming back from grading the road one day, and this is right when we had gotten our pagers. We have pagers for some of our first response staff and fire brigade and managers. We just gotten our pagers, and one of my good friends who was here was in the registration office, and she sent me a page. I was close enough-ish, 8-9 mile, going slow, and she sends me this page that says, T-bone steaks, shell 12. T-bones, shell 12. I'm there. I stopped grading the road and started driving back. Great. Crossed the 10-mile bridge, and right as I crossed the bridge, medic, this is the first aid station. Go ahead. Yeah. So I have this rash, and there's just dead, open radio traffic air. Nothing was being said, and I'm driving back thinking, what? So you have this rash. It's all I said. I said, okay, well, I'll be down in a few minutes. And then he told me, went into details, and started to, my name is so-and-so, and everyone can hear this. He has a radio, and there's a monitor speaker in the kitchen. So if you're in the kitchen, you get to hear it too. And yeah, so it's a little below my belt, and I lost it. I could not, I had to stop driving. And I'm like, stop talking about your rash below your belt. I'll be there soon. So, and I just said, okay, I'll see you soon. And that was the end of it. But that was an awkward moment in the medic office here. Most things are very small and easy to deal with. There was a lady who called once at 6 in the morning and wanted me to check her for ticks. I said, excuse me? Yeah, ticks. I might have one. Ticks.
Did they
lower belt? I think I just went back to bed. I didn't get up. Okay. Good for you. There's lots of stuff that happens here in the summertime. Most of it's very minor and easy to deal with and appreciate the people that come up here, but there's those times where somebody called me for fingernail clippers once. I looked at him like a dog. And, in the bookstore, you're lost. We gave him a file from the carpentry shop. Kind of to take that.
Aaron, we had one, it's not funny, but he's always involved in. But when we came into a village the first time oriented, one of the things they made really clear about the bowling alley is that you wear shoes.
Oh, yeah.
And so there's this kind of a cocky 12-year-old kid from Illinois who's out there bowling without shoes, and he drives a sliver just deep into his heel. I mean, this thing was really wedged in there. There's no way it was going to come out. And so it was looking like a trip down the lake, or, but fortunately, you know, we had the stuff, and, you know, numbed it up, cut it down, pulled it out about 4 or 5 stitches, and the kid was able to, you know, get on with his life, but, you know, you gotta wear shoes in a bowling alley, man.
Yeah. Wear shoes. During J-term, we play jokes J-term, and then we sometimes do minor jokes on the May 8th weekend kids. Every weekend in May, 200 high school kids come here, and they kind of take over the place. It's been this small, tight-knit winter community of 60, 70 people for the whole winter season. The grass is just starting to show, and then all these high school kids come for the weekend, and it's a little overwhelming. But there was this one that's really funny. I think the best was when Chuck did it. Director Chuck, went down to the lake, drove the bus down, and was sitting there. We had, I don't know who found this, but it was a cane that blind people use. And he had these big dark sunglasses on, and he was just sitting on the dock with his cane. Every single student, 200 high school kids, walked right past him. And so it came time to come up the hill, and he had an aide, and she led him to the bus. And on the bus he went, facing the front windshield, looking forwards. He started to give the bus announcements. Welcome to Lucerne. So she turns him around. Welcome to Lucerne. He gives his announcements and then he says, I need it to be quiet. I have to count to make it up the switchbacks. So he started the bus up and he's looking for the brake switch. He finds it, he's good to go, and he does this thing with his feet, and he's set, he's ready to go, he starts driving, 1, 2, 3, and he can see, so he's driving along, he gets to like 22, and he starts to crank the wheel over, he starts to drive up the hill in the whole bus, like they were laughing, I thought it was funny at first, dead quiet. All the way to the village. Apparently there was a chaperone who didn't think that was quite funny. He needs to be quiet, because I Welcome to Holden.
Close up unless there's any other.
That's fine. Well, thanks everybody for coming. So, as Bob shared funny stories about Holden.
Thank you. Yeah.